Gulliver's Travels, Part 2, Chapter 4. The country described, a proposal for correcting modern maps, the king's palace, and some account of the metropolis, the author's way of traveling my chief temple described. I now intend to give the reader a short description of this country, as far as I traveled in it, which was not above 2,000 miles round Lorborgrod, the metropolis, for the queen, whom I always attended, never went farther when she accompanied the king in his progresses, and there stayed till his majesty returned from viewing his frontiers. The whole extent of the prince's dominions reaches about 6,000 miles in length, and from 3 to 5 in breadth, which I cannot but conclude that our geographers in Europe are in great error by supposing nothing between the sea and Japan and California, for it is ever my opinion that there must be a balance of earth to counterpoise the great continent of Tartary, and therefore they ought to correct their maps and charts by joining this vast tract of land to the northwest part of America, wherein I shall be ready to lend them my assistance. The kingdom is a peninsula, terminated to the northeast by a ridge of mountains 30 miles high, which are altogether impassable by reason of the volcanoes upon the tops. Neither do the most learned know what sort of mortals inhabit beyond these mountains, or whether they be inhabited at all. On 3 other sides is bounded by the ocean. There is not one seaport in the whole kingdom, and those parts on the coast to which the rivers issue are so full of pointed rocks, and the sea generally so rough, that there is no venturing the smallest of their boats, so that these people who are wholly excluded from any commerce from the rest of the world. But the large rivers are full of vessels, and abound with excellent fish, for they seldom get any from the sea, because the sea fish are of the same size with those in Europe, and consequently not worth catching. Whereby it is manifest that nature, in the production of plants and animals of so extraordinary a bulk, is wholly confined to this continent, of which I leave the reasons to be determined by philosophers. However, now and then they take a whale that happens to be dashed against the rocks, where the common people feed on heartily. These whales I have known so large that a man could hardly carry one upon his shoulders, and sometimes, for curiosity, they are brought in hampers to Lorborgrod. I saw one of them in a dish at the king's table, which passed for a rarity, but I did not observe he was fond of it, for I think, indeed, the bigness disgusted him, although I have seen one somewhat larger in Greenland. The country is well inhabited, for it contains 51 cities, near 100 walled towns, and a great number of villages. To satisfy my curious reader, it may be sufficient to describe Lorborgrod. This city stands upon almost 2 equal parts on each side the river that passes through. Contains above 80,000 houses, about 600,000 inhabitants. It is in length 3 glumglungs, which make about 54 English miles, and 2.5 in breadth. As I measured it myself in the royal map made by the king's order, which was laid on the ground on purpose for me, and extended 100 feet, I paced the diameter and circumference several times barefoot, and, computing by the scale, measured it pretty exactly. The king's palace is no regular edifice, but a heap of buildings about 7 miles round. The chief rooms are generally 240 feet high, and broad and long in proportion. A coach was allowed to Glumdalclitch and me, wherein her governess frequently took her out to see the town, or go amongst the shops, and I was always of the party, carried in my box, although the girl, at my own desire, would have often taken me out and held me in her hand, that I might more conveniently view the houses and people as we passed along the streets. I reckoned our coach to be about a square of Westminster Hall, but altogether not so high. However, I cannot be very exact. One day the governess ordered our coachman to stop at several shops, where the beggars, watching their opportunity, crowded to the sides of the coach, and gave me the most horrible spectacle that ever a European eye beheld. There was a woman with cancer in her breast, swelled to a monstrous size, full of holes, in 2 or 3 of which I could have easily crept and covered my whole body. There was a fellow with a wen in his neck, larger than 5 woolpecks, and another with a couple of wooden legs, each about 20 feet high. But the most hateful sight of all was the lice crawling on their clothes. I could distinctly see the limbs of these vermin with my naked eye, much better than those of a European louse through a microscope, and their snouts with which they rooted like swine. They were the first I had ever beheld, and should have been curious enough to dissect one of them if I had the proper instruments which I unluckily left behind me in the ship, although indeed the sight was so nauseous that it perfectly turned my stomach. Besides the large box in which I was usually carried, the queen ordered a smaller one to be made for me, of about 12 feet square and 10 high, for the convenience of travelling. Because the other was somewhat too large for the Glumdalclitch's lap, and cumbersome in the coach, it was made by the same artist whom I directed in the whole contrivance. This travelling closet was an exact square, with a window in the middle of the 3 squares, and each window was latticed with iron wire on the outside, to prevent accidents in long journeys. On the 4th side, which had no window, 2 strong staples were fixed through which that the person had carried me. When I had a mind to be on horseback, put on a leather belt and buckled about his waist. This was always the office of some grave, trusty servant in whom I could confide, whether I attended the king and queen in their progress, or were disposed to see the gardens or pay a visit to some great lady or minister of state in the court. When Glenbucklich happened to be out of order, for I soon began to be known and esteemed among the greatest officers, and supposed more upon accounts of their majesty's favour than at any merit of my own. In journeys, when I was weary of the coach, a servant on horseback would buckle on my box and place it upon a cushion before him, and there I had a full prospect of the country on three sides from my three windows. I had in this closet a field bed and a hammock hung from the ceiling, two chairs and a table neatly screwed to the floor to prevent from being tossed about by the agitation of the horse or coach. And having been long used to sea voyages, these motions, although sometimes very violent, did not much discompose me. Whenever I had a mind to see the town, it was always in my travelling closet, which Glenbucklich held in a lap in a kind of open sedan, after the fashion of the country, borne by four men and attended by two others in the Queen's livery. The people, who had often heard of me, were very curious to crowd about the sedan, and the girl was complaisant enough to make the bearer stop, and to take me in her hand that I might be more conveniently seen. I was very desirous to see the chief temple, and particularly the tower belonging to it, which is reckoned the highest in the kingdom. Accordingly, one day my nurse carried me thither, but I must truly say I came back disappointed, for the height is not above 3,000 feet, reckoning from the ground to the highest pinnacle top, which, allowing for the great distance between the size of those people and us in Europe, is no great matter for admiration, nor at all equal in proportion, if I rightly remember, to Salisbury steeple. But not to detract from a nation to which, during my life, I shall acknowledge myself extremely obliged, it must be allowed that whatever this famous tower wants in height is amply made up in beauty and strength, for the walls are near 100 feet thick, built of hewn stone, whereof each is about 40 feet square, and adorned on all sides with statues of gods and emperors, cut in marble, larger than the life, placed in there several niches. I measured a little finger which had fallen down from one of the statues, and lay unperceived among some rubbish, and found it exactly 4 feet and an inch in length. Glumdalclitch wrapped it up in a muggle handkerchief, and carried it home in her pocket, to keep among other trinkets, of which the girl was very fond, as children at her age usually are. The king's kitchen is indeed a noble building, vaulted atop and about 600 feet high. The great oven is not so wide, by 10 paces, as the cupola in St. Paul's, for I measured the latter on purpose, after my return, but if I should describe the kitchen grate, the prodigious pots and kettles, the joints of meat turning on the spits, with many other particulars, perhaps I should be hardly believed. At least severe critic would apt to bethink that I enlarged a little, as travellers are often suspected to do, to avoid which censure I fear I have run too much into the other extreme. And if this treatise should happen to be translated into the language of the Brobdingnag, which is the general name of that kingdom, and transmitted thither, the king and his people would have reason to complain that I had done them an injury by a false and diminutive representation. His Majesty seldom keeps above 600 horses in his stables. They are generally from 54 to 60 feet high. But when he goes abroad on solemn days, he is attended for state by a military guard of 500 horse, which, indeed, I thought was the most splendid sight that could ever be beheld, until I saw part of his army in Battletalia, whereof I shall find another occasion to speak. End of chapter 4. Read by David Russell. For Lits Ago. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.